Hello, I'm Eric Lance. I'm a program manager on Microsoft's high performance computing team. Specifically, I work in the performance team within the high performance team. And I'm here to talk to you today about some performance tools and some of the methods and tips and tricks that we use to make sure a cluster is working well and at its best, and how you can leverage those kinds of tools to make sure that a cluster you're setting up for a customer or a partner is set up well also. We'll talk about some of the individual tools that we use. We'll talk about some of the high performance networking that's available in HPC server. And we'll talk about the message passing interface, MSMPI, that's part of the stack as well. There are three general usage patterns for HPC server. The first one is data, or embarrassingly parallel pattern, where each of the individual processes execute independently of one another. The second one is message passing. This is where all the processes, or some of the processes at least, of involved in the job are communicating with each other as the solution is going on. And this could be using the Microsoft MPI stack or a third-party MPI stack on the cluster. Any of those would work just as well. And the third is interactive use of the cluster. We sometimes call that service-oriented architecture, or SOA. This is a way of surfacing the cluster as a web service so that it's much easier to write clients that interactively use the cluster. Now, when it comes to measuring the performance of a cluster, we most often measure, most of the measurement tools, in fact, in the industry are MPI-based. And, in fact, that's where we'll be focusing for this presentation. Just know that there are other ways to use the cluster, and there are different tuning techniques that you'd use for those different usage patterns. Of course, there are many factors affecting high-performance applications and how they run. The degree of at which asynchronous operations are used to do computation while waiting for data, the memory access available for the application, the memory bandwidth especially, which is controlled by the process placement usually, the I/O to a file system, and of course the networking where messages flow back and forth to nodes. All of those can affect the performance one achieves with a given application. For the purpose of checking out a cluster, you'd normally focus on the networking end of things, and in fact that's where we'll spend most of our time. We'll talk a little bit about process placement. But for the most part, when running commercial benchmarking applications, those are really the only controls you have. You're not able to go in and break into the application and change the way that it works internally or the way that it does file system I/O. But in general, certainly those things have an effect. And if you have a customer or a partner who's not getting the performance they need out of their in-house app, just know there are many different factors. There's lots of information on the MSDN network about tuning for each of these different aspects of your application. And we work with partners and sometimes customers on tuning specific applications and helping them over any specific hurdle they may be facing. So let's talk about the performance toolbox that the team here at Microsoft and Redmond use. The first is good old reliable Perfmon. Perfmon's been around for a long time. You've seen it even back in XP days. It's still around and still a very useful way to monitor an application's execution on a computer and understand what limits that application's hitting, especially what hardware limits that it's hitting. And you can use Perfmon to monitor many, many different specific counters on the machine. There are a few of them listed out here in this slide, and some of the kind of the tolerances we use when we're trying to assess whether there's a problem on a given HPC app. For those of you who download the slides, there's also an in-depth discussion of each of these in the comments for this slide that explain what each of these counters are and exactly what we're looking for when we look for bottlenecks or problems with either the hardware or the application. One thing you may not know about Perfmon is that these days Perfmon runs on the exact same infrastructure, ETW, or Event Tracing for Windows, that's used for many different tools within Windows and outside of Windows. there's one infrastructure that gathers these events and allows you to translate them into different formats and save them off on files and subscribe to them live and that sort of thing, that is used by many different viewers. One of them is the HPC admin console. Those performance counters that you see in the reports, those actually come from ETW, from some of the perfmon counters. Perfmon itself, and then a tool we'll talk about shortly called XPerf. Now, speaking of the HPC administrative console, there are some tools, some diagnostics built directly into the HPC server administrative console that help you check out the network of your cluster and get an idea of the health and performance. There are tools for services and connectivity that just make sure your basic network services are up and that you can ping back and forth to machines, back and forth between all the nodes. Then there are networking performance diagnostics that let you check out the performance, the latency and bandwidth, for every link in the entire cluster. There's another tool that's available, MPI Ping Pong, that's the basis of these diagnostics. It's delivered with every HPC server installation. It goes along for the ride with all the rest of the executables there. It's a command line version of those diagnostics that I just spoke of for latency and bandwidth. But the MPI Ping Pong EXE command line tool lets you have a lot more control on how the test is run and gives you much, much more feedback, much more output and statistics about what was going on across the cluster. Now, you may have used other tools like Palace to measure latency and bandwidth. And Palace is a great tool, and we use it a lot internally here in the HPC labs as well as with customers and partners. The HPC Palace ping pong test, however, runs between exactly two of the nodes on which the job is running, which is good, but the assumption is that that's indicative of the rest of the network, and that's not always true. MPI Ping Pong will test all of the links in the network, the link of every node to every other node, fully connected mesh, if you will, and give you statistics in a report on all of those connections and their health and their latency and bandwidth measurements while it's at it. Now, you'll need to remember that when you run a job with MPI Ping Pong, you'll want to run one instance per node usually so that you test just the network. If you run one per core of the nodes, then sometimes you'll run 4 or 8 or as many as 16 instances on a single node sharing one NIC. That may be what you intend, to stress the NIC and understand what will happen to the latency and bandwidth then. But normally you want to test just the network. So you would use, as I've mentioned in the slide here at the bottom, the num nodes sort of scheduling when you submit the job so that you're requesting a certain number of nodes and MPI Ping Pong will run one instance on each of those nodes. Now, of course, when you get this latency and bandwidth information, you need to know whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. And this table will give you an idea of the kinds of bandwidth and latencies you might expect with these different types of hardware running with Windows Server. Now, please keep in mind that these are not the best possible numbers anyone could ever get. They're not intended to be that. They're just roughly what we see in the lab with kind of run-of-the-mill hardware, run-of-the-mill servers. So take these numbers with a grain of salt. If you see something close to these numbers, you're probably good on your hardware. If you see something very far away from these numbers for your hardware, then you'll want to look in a little more closely, do some troubleshooting, etc. So another tool that we have for testing an entire cluster is the Linpack Tuning Wizard, or Lizard for short. This works especially well on new clusters to understand if the nodes themselves are healthy, the CPUs are healthy, the network is healthy, and if your electrical supply and cooling capacity are up to the needs of your cluster when it's fully loaded. In fact, it's pretty common for us to run the Lizard on a new cluster and run into either blowing circuit breakers or half machines trip on a thermal breaker because they got too hot, because there was some kind of a cooling problem. We find that time and again with this tool. And the reason is it's not doing anything particularly fancy. It's running Linpack underneath, but it's running Linpack over and over and over to optimize the input parameters used for Linpack. So you get the best possible Linpack measurement of the floating point operations possible on your cluster. And as it's doing that, as it's optimizing these 29 different input parameters, it's running job after job, and it will keep your cluster pegged, the CPUs and the network pegged, hour after hour. And for that reason, you tend to find any cooling or power problems right away. So it's ended up, although it wasn't designed this way, it's ended up being a great loading and burn-in tool. When the Lizard runs, it shows you the results of each of the guesses it's making. You can see in the bottom part of this screen, those are the current Linpack input parameter guesses, so to speak, that the Lizard's using. And the resulting dots along that graph on the top, each one of those represents a Linpack job. And obviously the Lizard's trying to make those dots go as high as possible. And so you can actually watch it in real time as it tries different things and keeps the plot going. Of course, when it's finally finished, you get a dialog similar to the one in the lower left, which prints out the maximum number of floating point operations that the Lizard was able to generate with your hardware, and an indication of the efficiency of the entire cluster, the CPUs, the memory, and the network all working together. In this case, it was about 74%, which is a little low for modern hardware. With the latest and greatest processors and the very fastest InfiniBand networks, we can achieve something like 90%. But on typical lab hardware, more run-of-the-mill stuff, Clover Town or some similar class of hardware, we'll see 75% or so as a reasonable number. Now, if you were going to do this calculation yourself, you'd need to look at the right there where that's the actual output of what Linpack does. You need to know where, using those red boxes, the actual output, the final result was, and then compare that with the theoretical maximum for the hardware you're on. So just to make it easier, the Lizard does that for you and presents the results. But whether or not this number is important to you, this is the same number, by the way, that folks would submit on a top 500 submission. This is the exact same test that's used for those top 500 cluster measurements. Whether or not the actual number is important to you, sometimes the most useful part of this was the load that it kept on the cluster and your ability to know that the cluster was healthy by surviving hours of this load. Now, I also will make mention of the Windows Performance Toolkit. This is something that not many OEMs, SIs, other partners that are just trying to verify a cluster would use. This is something more like a developer tool. But occasionally you'll get into situations where you need to understand exactly what's going on with an application and maybe why it's not running as well as you thought it was. And the Windows Performance Toolkit can give you a lot of information about the application and its behavior on the hardware. In fact, this is the same set of tools that's used to measure the performance of Windows and optimize, in fact, Windows itself by our internal performance folks that's been published for use by customers. It correlates not just what the application is doing, but also system activity. If you also provide symbols for the application you're interested in, you can get very detailed analysis, very detailed results of exactly what the machine was doing while the application was running. I've provided a link at the very bottom of this slide with a pointer to the Windows Server SDK where you can get this performance toolkit, and you can download it and use it for free. Here's an example of a Windows Performance Toolkit tool. It's called XPerf, and it's showing a timeline of some results. In the top, you see the CPU utilization for each of two CPUs on this machine. And concurrently, in the bottom, you'll see the disk usage and whether that was read or write activity during the same time period. You can see in the top graph here that I've highlighted just the middle section of it there in light blue. And by right-clicking, I can zoom in to see just that part of the graph, or I can bring up a summary table of all the individual events in text and drill down into those events to see exactly what was calling what and who was waiting on whom, and understand any bottlenecks in the hardware or the OS or the application itself. So the Windows Performance Toolkit is a very powerful option. As I said, it's oftentimes used by developer kind of folks, but it can be a very handy tool for an OEM or an SI partner to use to understand exactly why a given application is behaving the way it does, and understand if there's, say, a file I/O problem, what the problem was, and potentially switch to a different kind of hard drive architecture, or perhaps faster networking if the file's being used remotely. There are any number of things you could do to adjust the hardware to make the application run better as well, normally. I spoke about high-performance networking, and we do quite a bit of that around here in the HPC team in Redmond. We've developed an RDMA interface for networking on Windows as part of developing the HPC server product. Now, RDMA networking is the fastest way that we or anyone know how to do networking today. It stands for Remote Direct Memory Access, which is a little bit of an oxymoron, but the idea is that one machine can remotely access the memory of another machine without the CPU of that other machine being involved at all. So there's no interrupts to wait on, no kernel transitions, that sort of thing. All of the transfer can happen very quickly in the RDMA-capable hardware itself. And not all networking hardware is RDMA-capable. There are different classes of RDMA hardware that you can do RDMA over Ethernet, and that's normally called IWARP. You can do RDMA over InfiniBand, and then there are other network fabrics that do RDMA as well, or that have network direct drivers. They all run much faster than you could run just through the normal TCP stack. If you look on the diagram here, you'll see that the network direct provider, if we go down through the MSMPI stack to the network direct provider, it goes straight down to the hardware itself. That's the way that it does data transfer, is directly down to the hardware. So not only does it bypass the TCP stack, it bypasses the entire OS, really. And so it goes as fast as the hardware is capable of going. So MSMPI then has four paths to communicate between processes. When the processes happen to be on the same physical machine, MSMPI will automatically switch to shared memory communication, which is the fastest of all. If RDMA hardware is available, it will then use Network Direct and go down through that RDMA hardware. If not, it can use the older WinSock Direct style of RDMA, which is sockets-based RDMA, which is faster than just the regular TCP stack. It's not as fast as Network Direct, but it can also use that if you decide you wanted to go that route. And then, of course, if you just have an Ethernet card with no RDMA capability, it'll certainly run that way as well through the TCP stack. And it will automatically adjust for whatever network connection is available to you. But as a hardware partner, one of the key differentiators you can offer your customers is to be able to run at significantly higher overall efficiencies with faster networking for these MPI-based applications by choosing RDMA-capable hardware and making sure that a network direct driver, or sometimes called a network direct provider, is available from your vendor. So there are really three points I'm hoping you'll take away about Network Direct. First, that it's fast. It is very fast and gives us world-class cluster efficiencies on top 500 class clusters, in addition to running very fast on even our lab, very small clusters as well. Network Direct is the way to make your cluster go as fast as it possibly can. And that Network Direct is stable. We routinely run Network Direct with RDMA-capable hardware on clusters with 2,000 cores. And we've tested it up to 25,000 cores. And those runs had to go for hours, in fact, days without fail. And lastly, that Network Direct is logo tested. Just like any hardware option available with Windows, as you'd expect, we have a logo program to ensure the quality of the drivers and maintain very close interaction with the networking IHVs that create that hardware all throughout their development process. One final note, Network Direct drivers and tools are developed in the Open Fabrics Alliance in a shared source project in which Microsoft participates. And I've included a link there at the bottom of the slide, which you can use to get more information on the Open Fabrics Windows projects. We'll talk just a moment about MPI features. One of the new features of MPI that may help you as you're diagnosing a problem with a cluster is the connectivity table. The connectivity table lets you know exactly what mode of communication was going on between different MPI ranks of a job while it was running, and lets you output that information in the standard out of the job. So you can see a table such as the one I have here in the slide by simply setting an environment variable and pitch connectivity table equal to 1. And MSMPI will automatically tag this information at the end of your output for your job. This particular example is a 64 rank Fluent job running on a cluster that had InfiniBand. There were 8 cores per node, and you'll notice the pattern of plus signs in rectangles that go down the diagonal. That's where the cores on a given node were communicating with each other through shared memory. And the at symbols indicate that they were communicating with the rest of the MPI ranks through Network Direct. Now let's think about a case where something goes wrong. In this case, I deliberately sabotaged one of the nodes. I went into it and turned off Network Direct on that node so that the node would fail back to running over sockets. The job still completed, but when I looked at the answers, of course, all of the ranks ended up waiting on that slow node, and it slowed down the entire job, and I got very bad Fluent results from that. Now, in looking at the connectivity table here, you can see all those S's piled up, meaning those ranks were communicating over sockets, which is going to be much slower than Network Direct. And in fact, you can see where those S's intersect. That's the exact node, the node that happened to be running ranks 24 through 31. That's the node where I turned off Network Direct. That's the one that had failed, and that if I were diagnosing this cluster, I would then follow up to see what was wrong with its configuration. So here's an example where MPI is doing this broadcast as efficiently as it can. Instead of one process trying to communicate with 64 others, which would be one way to do a broadcast, it's actually broadcasting to 2 other ranks, which then broadcast to 2 more, to 2 more, and the message ripples out across the cluster much faster than it could if one rank were trying to talk to sequentially to all the others. Another important part of getting good benchmark results is process placement, and you do have several options to place processes using HPC Server and MPI. Let's talk about process placement in general. There are 3 different types. Application aware, in this case you'd probably use node groups to specify which nodes in the cluster had a particular application and then schedule just to those nodes. Capacity aware, where you needed nodes that had a particular number of cores or a minimum number of cores or a minimum amount of memory in which to run. And in that case, you'd put requirements on the nodes that you requested for the job. Again, that's really a scheduling activity in HPC Server, and there are options in the scheduler to allow you to specify these things. Lastly is NUMA, or non-uniform memory access aware type scheduling. This is where you're trying to conserve or use wisely, let's put it, your memory bandwidth and spread out your processes across the cluster so you're utilizing your memory bandwidth as efficiently as possible. Here's an example. If we have a compute node that has 2 sockets on it, and each socket has 4 cores, and I want to run 4 MPI processes, in this case, I'm going to run foo.exe. You can see on the right there that if I use the command line mode of submitting a job, I might say job submit num cores 4 MPI exec foo.exe. And the result would be that all of those processes would get loaded onto that very first socket, which would slam the memory on that socket, the memory bandwidth on that socket. there are usually many more cores than there is memory bandwidth to service them on today's modern servers. So to spread out the processes on the node more efficiently, to be able to use the memory bandwidth that's available on that second socket, you would just use the dash affinity flag on MPI-exec, and MPI-exec will automatically spread those out and try to make sure that you are not sharing, or at least you're sharing at a minimum, the L2, L3, and any other caches that are on the CPUs. This sort of spreading out the processes, carefully placing them to maximize the memory bandwidth that's available, to use the memory, all the memory bandwidth that's available, can have a dramatic effect on the performance of many simulation applications, for example, which tend to be very memory intensive. And lastly, let's just spend a moment on tracing. Here again, this is really more of a developer feature, but just so that you're aware, it's possible to trace any application running on MSMPI, whether or not you actually have the symbols and the debug information to actually dig into the code. You can still see how an application's behaving and potentially optimize the way you launch the jobs or the configuration of the cluster so that it runs better. You get this sort of information through the use of tracing, which once again uses our old friend the event tracing for Windows infrastructure, ETW. In this case, MPI events from each of the running ranks is funneled into that event tracing for Windows infrastructure, and you can view that information and cross-correlate that information in several different ways. There are different viewers that are available, for example, Vampir, and there's a viewer available in Visual Studios. Visual Studios profiling tools will let you look at these events very effectively, and the Vampir viewer pictured here will let you view the events in many different ways, as you can see, to understand exactly how the application was executing and where it was waiting and what parts of the execution it was waiting. You can also use MPitch's Jump Shot. That's a project run out of Argonne National Labs. There's even a text viewer if you have a small job and just want to look at the raw events themselves. That's sometimes helpful. And I've included a link there at the bottom of the slide if you wanted to go check out the trial version of Vampir and run it with some of your MPI traces. The way you would turn tracing on is pretty simple. Just add dash trace to your MPI exec command, and that application will produce tracing data. There's a white paper on the Microsoft download site also that describes in much detail how to do tracing on HPC server clusters. So that brings our performance tool discussion to an end. I hope this was helpful to you. And remember that there are discussion forums that are monitored by the HPC server team here in Redmond. So if you have particular performance questions or development questions or cluster admin questions, go ahead and post those to those discussion forums, and we'll be happy to answer you directly there.